I do not know of anything that is more important for us than the recovery of fellowship among preachers. This is not any intention to harangue. I feel like saying that he who is without sin, let him be the first one to cast a stone. Actually, the inclusion of such a subject in our program serves as an indictment against us. It is suggested that somewhere along the way we have lost something that we need to recover, that we need to refine. Now, the only major trouble that I find with my subject for tonight is this, or one of the major problems, is that after I have delivered it, it will exclude all of the convention gossip so far as I'm concerned. I won't be in on any of it. And that will be something, of course, that I might miss, but this subject will preclude any such as that and my engaging in it. Now, in order for the message to be more realistic, I will use some illustrations, but I've changed the names and the places to protect the guilty. You perhaps heard of the preacher, it's always dangerous to tell anything if you haven't been in all the sessions because somebody's already heard it and told it, but you heard of the preacher who left his church because of health. He said they were sick and tired of him. Well, I suppose that there are a lot of preachers who have somewhat that same feeling. Really, in many instances, they're quite lonely. They do not have a pastor to whom they can go. An ancient Chinese missionary stated that there were four psalms that they had to learn. The first was Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd." We have to know that he is mine from personal experience, he said. Then Psalm 121, "He preserveth my going out and my coming in. He is my keeper." And Psalm 126, "He that goeth forth weepeth shall doubtless come again rejoicing." We must have passion. And then Psalm 133, he said we must know, "Behold how good and pleasant it is for the brethren to dwell together in unity." Now we can give the recitation of the first three with great fluency, but most of the time it is extremely difficult for us to recite the third. For somewhere along the way, there has been a breakdown in our fellowship in many instances, subtly, and whether it's known or unknown, still it's there. And we're going to see some of the contributing factors toward that. Really, it is not something so much outward as it is something that is inward. I'm indebted to Dr. Porter Ruth, whom I heard speak recently over in Fort Worth, for this definition of anatomy. It's a definition that was given by a very small boy. And this was the way he described it. He said, "Your head is kind of round and hard, and your brains are in it. Your hair is on it, your face is in front of your head, where you eat. Your neck is what keeps your head out of your collar. It's hard to keep clean. Your stomach is something that if you don't eat, it hurts, and spinach don't help none. Your spine is a long bone in your back that keeps you from folding up. Your back is behind you no matter how quick you turn around. Your fingers stick out from your hand so you can throw a curve and add up arithmetic. Your feet are what you run on. That's all there is to it except what's inside, and I never saw it." But really, the last statement that he made was the most significant, for it is what is inside that really counts. And in this subject, we are actually dealing with outward circumstances which have been precipitated by inward dispositions and attitudes. You recall the most familiar passage or chapter in the Bible is the 15th chapter of Luke. There Jesus tells that story or those stories for the purpose of telling about the elder brother. This is the real reason for the chapter. And as he relates the incident of the elder brother, he is thereby reflecting the religious leadership of his day. And what was to be found within that life of the elder brother is oftentimes to be found in your life and in mine. There was no overt sin on his part, but rather it was a matter of attitude and a matter of disposition. And that's our problem. Oh, we talk about ministerial ethics, and basically that's what we're describing tonight. But most of the things that we describe as ministerial ethics would be based on wrong attitude or sheer, stark jealousy. You know, you were told when you left your former pastorate that you were never to go back, never to pass through that town again, never to say hello to anyone. How foolish and how absurd can we get? How long can we go on fooling ourselves? This doesn't mean that we want to pastor two churches. If we want to do that, we shouldn't have left the other one in the first place unless we left for the reasons of health. But that isn't the point at hand, that we're trying to pastor two churches. But a person who says that bases his attitude on a feeling of competitiveness and the idea that I have a divine franchise on this diocese. Nobody else is to penetrate it. Dr. Kenneth MacFarlane stated on one occasion, when he was formerly a football coach and was very, very successful, he said, your friends like to see you do well, but not too well. And how true that is. If we're really and honest to the Master, be true with ourselves. You know, we find it so easy to comfort failures, but at the same time to be the enemy of the successful. Oh, we can weep great tears with those that weep, but it's very difficult for us to rejoice with those that rejoice. It's difficult to congratulate our fellow preacher with the same feeling with which we console him. And when that's true, there's something wrong in your heart and mine. And then, as I said, I would be the first one to say, let him who is without sin be the first one to cast a stone. There are rare examples of flagrant prodigality so far as the ministry is concerned, and we thank God for that. But the sins of the elder brother are all too common among us. They're often monstrous in their results. Look for a moment at the life of this elder brother. See two or three things quickly about him. First of all, he was completely lacking in any interest in companionship. He didn't care about what was going on the inside. You know, we preachers are like that sometimes. We're loners. We're just interested in our church and in our little territory where we live. We're just interested in having two more than our brother had in Sunday school on the preceding Sunday. You agree? But how refreshing it is to find that minister who has the other thing that this elder brother was lacking, the matter of love and abiding deep compassion. This was the thing that kept him on the outside, that the reason that he would not go in. You know, isn't it a tragedy tonight that we can have one of our brethren? Maybe he's been highly successful and we have known him and loved him, and he's fallen into some great sin and he's lost his family and he's lost his church and he's lost his reputation and his character's gone. And what do you find most of the time among our brethren, among ourselves? You find the guilt of telling jokes about it, or laughing about it, Instead of getting on our knees and saying, "Oh God, help all of us that we might be strong, and help our fellow brethren that they might be strong, and deliver us from temptation, and breed in our souls a feeling of concern and love and compassion that shows our brethren that we really and truly care." John Milton said on one occasion, "If the gold rust, what shall the baser metals do?" Brethren, if you and I preach love and forgiveness and compassion and lack them ourselves, what in the name of Jesus shall be the fate of our people? If the gold rust, what shall the baser metals do? Not only did the elder brother lack companionship and love and compassion, but he had another terrible affliction, and this was a matter of jealousy. Now this is getting real close home. This is right where you and I live. The matter of being jealous, rejoicing. You know, so often you find that people, we preachers, rejoice in the difficulties of others. Well, you've heard it said, well, I hear he's not doing too well now. What do you mean by that? We're the preachers of good news on Sunday, and we're the peddlers of bad news on Monday to our own indictment. We hear about another church in trouble. We do not hover over it like a dove of peace, but we're there like a vulture. We're like an undertaker at a catastrophe, just waiting to see what can be the benefits for us. But listen, my fellow preachers, the trouble in one church breeds trouble in your church and in mine. And when one of our brethren fail, we fail. But when they succeed, the kingdom succeeds. And the greatest thing that can happen in Fort Worth is for my neighboring churches to succeed. Makes my people work harder. Hard for us to realize that, and we really and truly deep down in our hearts don't believe it, I don't suppose. You know, this matter of jealousy, you've heard it so often, a well-worn phrase, "Well, he's a good preacher, but..." Oh, yes, he's popular, but you know, he injects that humor. That's what gets the people. He may study a little. That doesn't hurt. He may pray some. Or you hear the statement, "Oh, well, he's really not a man's preacher, you know. All the women and children, yeah, they like him. He's pretty popular with them." How sad for all of us that this kind of thinking would ever be true. He's a good preacher, but... And we hang on the latter phrase and hope for the worst. But may I come quickly to say to you that we must be right on the inside. It's the analysis of the spiritual anatomy within that really and truly makes the difference. I want to ask you a question. I want you to be honest with yourself and with God. How many of us here tonight would really and truly, deep down in our souls, like for our fellow preachers to know exactly what we're like? Or do you have to pretend to be something you're not? C.S. Lewis made this statement. If you would like to love someone but you don't, begin treating him as if you did, and soon you will. Isn't that a marvelous prescription even for preachers? If you're jealous, if you don't love that brother, begin treating him like you do. And C.S. Lewis said, soon you will. Speakman has a book entitled, Love is Something You Do. Act it out and you will soon find the realization of it. May I close with this quick statement. Catherine Marshall, in her glorious book, Beyond Ourselves, which every preacher and every Christian should read, tells the moving story about a young student by the name of Harvey Smith, who was a devoted Christian, who went to Columbia University to study. He found that he was the roommate of a person who was emotionally disturbed. Soon he tried to move, but as she goes on to relate at length in the book, because of his desire to move and the boy's complete dependence upon Harvey Smith, he attacked him one night and practically stabbed him to death. In fact, he punctured his lung. And in desperation and at death's door, this emotionally disturbed person came to Harvey Smith's bedside and said, "Can you forgive me?" And Harvey Smith said, "Yes. Yes, I forgive you." Now listen to her statement of the physician of Harvey Smith. As he hung between life and death, the doctor came and said, "I've watched you closely. You've been at peace with yourself. If you had held on to any hate at all, that negative emotion would have sapped your energy so much you probably would not have pulled through. The wrong attitude would have literally destroyed him." Could our negative emotion sap so much of our spiritual fervor that we would serve to contribute to a sick society which at the moment has a slim chance of pulling through? It needs the blessed recovery of the glorious fellowship of the greatest group of men on God's earth, God's preachers.